Hello, Boston. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Liberty on the Air. My name is Ken Van Tassel, sitting in for our fearless leader, Dan Fishman, who is out today celebrating his 50th birthday.
It's the 10th anniversary of his 40th.
Not sure what that music is coming from. That's coming from somehow Pat is playing music. Thanks for tuning in to Liberty on the Air. Not sure if what I first said in the show went over the air, so I'll repeat it. Apologies if you already heard this. My name is Ken Van Tassel, sitting in for Dan Fishman, who is celebrating his 50th birthday today, so he's out. But thankfully, you don't have to be stuck with just me for the next 60 minutes. We have in the studio today two wonderful libertarian activists, one being Jeff Lyons, who's also a member of the Massachusetts Libertarian Party State Committee. Jeff,
hey, thanks evening. For being
on. And also we have Heather Mullins.
Hi, guys.
We also have Heather Mullins on the show. You host a show on Free Talk Live every Thursday from 7 to 9 p.m. Is that right?
Yeah, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Free Talk Live. So you can listen at www.freetalklive.com. I co-host it every week. And so this is nothing new for me. It's a nationally syndicated radio program that's on about 170 stations nationwide. So looking forward to being on Liberty on the Air for the first time.
And as always, guys, you can weigh in on any of the topics discussed today by phone at 617-266-6868, or shoot us a text at 680-680. So last Tuesday, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh and City Councilor Tito Jackson squared off in the last of their two scheduled mayoral debates, hosted by WGBH. Jackson, the underdog in the race by far, is polling at about 23%. To Mayor Walsh's 58%, with about 7% undecided about a New Suffolk, according to New Suffolk University poll. My question to you is, did you even have any idea that there was a mayoral race happening? Because it seems like nobody at all is talking about it. Start with you, Jeff.
Well, I mean, both of these guys are Democrats, right?
Well, you know, the race is so nonpartisan, right?
Yeah. Is it really, though?
It is, yeah. Yeah.
No, I feel like there's no challenger in this race. I mean, if these kinds of things, it really undermines democracy when these sorts of things are decided in the primaries, when you obviously there's such a low turnout in primary elections. So, like, when you have a Democrat run against a Democrat, do you really feel like you have a choice in democracy when you're really just – when it comes election day, you only have one choice on the ballot?
Well, you don't in Boston. Basically, it feels like these two candidates are trying to out-government each other. There was a bunch of topics discussed, but one of the big ones that was talked about was the housing in Boston and how some people are getting priced out of housing. And there was an argument back and forth with Tito Jackson saying, you know, what Mayor Walsh considers affordable housing is housing that costs in the range of 77, that folks with income levels of $77,000 a year can afford. And that how can, sorry about that. And then how can individuals that are looking for housing that are the poorest Bostonians, how can they find housing?
A little bit unfortunate is that with a situation like Mayor Walsh, like most people, when it comes to re-election, they don't actually look into what the incumbent has actually done, right? So like Mayor Walsh has been the mayor, but does anybody know if anything's actually improved? Like has the numbers been pulled? Has the housing, you know, shortage been fixed? I mean, like how would you rate him overall as you live relatively around
here,
right?
I'm not a Bostonian, but you know, if you ask him, of course, he's going to tell you that he's done some really awesome things.
That's what they all say.
Right. So I'm born and raised in Somerville. I lived in Boston in my college years. I moved back to Somerville after a number of years. But I mean, I grew up in an apartment building, and actually a very stark contrast. I grew up in an apartment building that was tenant owned, and across the street was the government public housing projects. And I think over the 20, 25 years that community progressed, it was a tenant-owned community. And over the years, you've seen so many improvements happened to that tenant-owned community where the rent that people paid in the apartment was paid into this association that actually invested the money in that community as opposed to a government housing across the street.
Nothing improves.
Nothing has really happened over the past 25 years. I mean, they put some vinyl siding on the brick building, but it's still the projects.
Sure. When there was a question posed in the debate by the debate moderator, Jim Broad of WGBH, asking if Boston needs to bring back some sort of rent control. And actually, rent control was actually repealed statewide in 1994 by a statewide referendum vote. But actually, in the city of Boston, the majority of voters voted to keep rent control. And actually, to Mayor Walsh's credit, he said, no, rent control is not right for Boston. It won't work in Boston. You know, we kind of understand the economics a little bit better than most people to know that rent control is not a solution to a housing problem. It's actually a violation of property right owners. Mm-hmm. But of course, Tito Jackson said, yeah, we should look at that. And my basic question looking at this race is, where is any voice in this race of someone who believes in the freedom and liberty to use your property as you see fit, to use everything that you've earned as you see fit?
Now, do you think that, like, living in such a congested area like Boston, that property rights become more difficult to establish? Because living up in New Hampshire, I mean, there's probably more people in the city of Boston than there is in the entire state of New Hampshire. You know what I mean? So property rights, the battles seem to be fought very differently in the two, like, between Boston and New Hampshire.
Yeah, right now, most of the fights happening in Boston are over multi-million-dollar property developments.
Yeah, all these condos that are popping up in Southie.
Right, and a big thing with those is that there's certain incentive programs that the city of Boston will give those developers if they build a certain percentage of the housing to be affordable housing or low-income housing. And Tito Jackson's point was that these units, in order to qualify for low-income housing, are not housing units that technically the lowest, poorest Bostonians could ever afford. And it's the same kind of thing we've seen with Chapter 40B laws around the state of Massachusetts, which is a state law that allows developers to come in and build properties on land that they are allowed to actually violate Town Zoning Board of Appeals. All right, let's go to Caleb on the phone from 603. Caleb, you're on the air.
Yeah. How's it going, Jeff?
Hey, how you doing, Caleb?
Wait, is this Caleb I think it is?
Yeah, I think it is.
This is State Representative Caleb Q. Dyer from the New Hampshire State
shut
House.
Shut up, Jeff.
Hi, Caleb.
Well, you got a message for Dan, Caleb?
You're in Boston radio. Nobody knows who you are. I have to introduce you.
Yeah, I know. But I was just calling to wish Dan a happy birthday. I'm sorry I couldn't make it to his party. I know, Heather, you invited me, but I just wanted to wish him a happy birthday on the air, just so he knows, and hopefully he's listening. But other than that, I heard you guys talking about the housing situation in Boston. I don't really have much to comment on that, but
well, you're a state legislator in New Hampshire, right? I mean, you
I think the housing situation is a little different.
Yeah, you don't have the exact same kind of scenario, but you know, theoretically, you know, the city of Manchester might want to do something like that. What would be your position?
Oh, geez. Well, like, were you talking about the statewide referendum that you guys had on the, what was it, the rent control?
Yeah.
Yeah, that stuff wouldn't fly in New Hampshire. It just wouldn't. There would be massive bipartisan opposition to it. Even the Democrats are smart enough up here to know, you know, that's just, it's foolish.
I don't know, as the liberals in Massachusetts slowly migrate northwards, because they can't understand why their property tax bills or income tax is going up.
And the people in New Hampshire want them to turn around.
You might be getting more of an infestation, but hopefully people like you can keep that from happening.
Well, the thing, it's interesting. Now, I'm sure you're familiar, many of the listeners probably won't be, but the economist Henry George, he had a very interesting set of ideas concerning, you know, how taxes should be structured. Essentially, he believed in only one tax, a land value tax. And if you actually look at the way that the tax structure is in New Hampshire, you'll find that the majority of the burden is in a property tax that's levied at the local level.
Right. That's sometimes really, the thing that's thrown out by people saying, oh, I'm not going to go to New Hampshire because the property taxes are too high.
Because the property taxes are so high. But the benefit of that is basically all of the burden is concentrated in the property tax. And it makes it much easier for people, whether or not you just own property or you rent or whatever, it makes it much easier for people to kind of calculate their burden. The only other thing that New Hampshire has that we really use to generate revenue is the business tax, and it's split up between two taxes, really. But, you know, those are essentially the two big taxes that we, you know, levy on citizens. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people in Massachusetts are going to see that and see, you know, basically that's a much better system for them because, you know, basically what you see is what you pay.
Right.
And there's no hidden bolt like there is down in Massachusetts.
All right, Caleb, thanks for calling in.
Can't say that word on the air.
Thanks for calling in, Caleb.
Very bad boy. Very bad boy.
We're all wishing Dan a very happy birthday. And, you know, now that he's not going to have a radio show, he's going to have a lot of free time. So something interesting, though, on the rent control aspect that we're talking about was actually a study from the California Legislative Analyst Office. You know, clearly a right-wing extremist group, mm-hmm. something that's done by the California state government. So it's probably just junk. But they actually did a study that found that encouraging private housing construction can actually help low-income Californians who do not receive any government assistance because considerable evidence suggests that construction of market-rate housing reduces housing costs for low-income households and consequently helps to mitigate displacement in many cases. So actually, you know, it shouldn't be that big of a surprise that the laws of supply and demand apply to housing markets as they do in other markets. But you build private housing that people want to buy, people move out of their homes that are lower cost or that have appreciated in value to newer ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's houses available at the lower end of the market for people to buy.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all understand the laws of supply and demand. And that.
Well, you'd be surprised. I think a lot of people don't.
Yeah, or maybe they don't. But I think that people are reluctant to move. They're so attached to like where they came from. Like, honestly, I'm from Boston.
True,
I would never want to live anywhere else, even though that, you know, there would be reasons for me to move maybe to New Hampshire in Caleb's district.
Caleb kind of sold us on New Hampshire.
Yeah.
So maybe sometimes you got to vote with your feet. And I know it can be hard to get up and go to a new place, but sometimes it's the best thing to do.
I think that's part of what inflates the demand, though. People don't want to move, so that there's a lot of demand that people leverage.
All right. When we come back, will you let Amazon delivery drivers into your home via their smartphone while you're away?
Yeah,
we'll talk about that coming up.
No.
So this week, Amazon unveiled its newest service that has been raising some eyebrows among privacy advocates everywhere. Amazon Key is a new service that pairs a smart lock and an Amazon cloud-connected camera together to allow Amazon delivery drivers to drop packages that you order via Amazon into your home while you're away.
Was it like a little umbrella just floats onto your doorstep?
No, this is the...
They're not using the drones yet, are they?
No, this is just a delivery driver that you don't know that is, I'm sure Amazon has fully vetted, that are going up to your door, scanning or doing having a PIN access to your front door, opening your door and then placing your package inside and then closing your door.
Yeah, I mean, God bless them for trying, but like, no.
Heather, you signed up for this?
This is news to me. I mean, I know they're the only thing I've heard recently about Amazon was that H2Q had, you know, or HQ2 headquarters 2 that they're bidding for because Governor Sununu up in New Hampshire put in a pretty heavy bid and apparently was going after Mayor Walsh, I think, with that. I read that basically in Governor Sununu's bid for the headquarters to be built there, he was kind of like dropping some bombs on Massachusetts, like, yeah, you won't have to deal with their taxes and their heavy regulations and all this other
traffic
stuff. Like, come to New Hampshire.
Actually,
corporate income tax. No.
That was a big focal point in the mayor debate that I was talking about earlier, was that Mayor Walsh is in favor for some pretty hefty tax subsidies for Amazon to bring their headquarters to Boston.
Was it the whole reason they didn't bring the Olympics to Boston? Because that was because of the traffic. It's just so congested as it is right now. When you add another 50,000 people, which is what this headquarters is going to bring, you're going to be looking at traffic times in Boston are going to skyrocket. And people-
to give Tito credit, he says absolutely no tax subsidies for Amazon. He thinks Amazon should want to come to Boston. Now, there's a little bit of a debate amongst, you know, are tax subsidies good or bad, because they can be perceived as unfair. But I don't know. Letting anyone keep more tax dollars seems good to me, so I'm not really that opposed to it.
Which makes sense why he'd want to go to New Hampshire instead.
Pat, are you going to sign up for this Amazon key?
Absolutely not. I can't even trust my own next door neighbors to go into my house when I'm not there. So why would I trust the Amazon delivery guy?
Well, I mean, I think it's trying to be a solution to a problem that some people have had, especially in cities where packages
disappear
that are left on their doorstep are gone by the time they get home, because they see an Amazon package. You might know your neighbor is into like tech items or something. There's a good chance there's something valuable in there.
That always happens right around Christmas time when everyone's getting all their Christmas gifts problem. And stuff like that delivered.
I'm sure there will be people.
Is Amazon trying to roll this out before the holiday season?
I'm sure there will be people that sign up and love it. I'm sure. But, you know, I really don't think many people are going to sign up because they have concern about it. And they have legitimate concerns, because one thing, smart locks suck. They're awful. They're clearly hackable. There's going to be hacks for the most common smart locks that people will be able to just bring any cell phone with the proper app on it and unlock your door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's one.
I'll tell you, I experienced a home invasion burglary while I was home. Somebody broke into my basement about a year ago. And it's like one of the most traumatic things that you can go through, you know, for months on end to not feel safe in your own home, that somebody has gained access to it and you don't know who they are and they took thousands of dollars worth of your stuff and left with it.
Yeah.
It's one of the most traumatic things that you can experience, to be in your house and not feel safe. So for me to be able to give somebody that I don't even know, I mean, you could introduce me to the dude at Amazon that delivers the package. I don't care.
It would be a different guy each time.
Sorry, man, but like, if I'm not home, like, you can do what UPS does, and, you know, or whatever everybody else does, and like, come back later.
And Amazon's rebuttal to that supposedly is that you're required to have this Amazon Cloud camera. So every time one of these delivery drivers enters your home, there's a video recording of it. But the bottom line is that Amazon is forcing you, if you want the service, to use their Amazon Cloud connected camera.
Well, couldn't the people from Amazon come back when they're off duty and have the same code to your door?
Yeah, and I mean,
the idea is that the driver might not even be the guy that does the burglary, but he might keep a list of, this house has good stuff, this house has bad stuff, this house is worth robbing, and then give that to his buddy, who he is very loosely connected with.
I mean, I don't get too much into the whole scheming of thinking. I mean, it's a matter of, you know, how much risk are you willing to take in your, you know, online shopping? If you're that worried about, get a P.O. box.
That's a huge thing about security. Home security, bank security, no matter what you're talking about, there's no such thing as an unbreakable lock. Whatever lock that you have, whatever security functions, whether it's a bank, the Federal Reserve, Fort Knox, all you're doing is trying to put as many barriers in between somebody trying to break in to discourage them from doing it. There's a way to do it. You're just trying to make it as unappealing as possible. And with anything that Amazon's trying to do, there's a way to get around that.
Yeah, but skipping the security aspect, there's also a privacy implication here, because in a world where we're giving a lot of our information to Googles of the world, Amazons of the world.
Oh, it's all for sale.
When you sign up for the service, you are authorizing Amazon to, quote, process and retain your recordings in the cloud to provide and improve our services, end quote. So they are using this information. And what is the likelihood that we end up seeing live leak videos of people's hacked cloud cameras showing people doing who knows what in their own homes that people don't know is being filmed? And so it's a concern that I have when anytime there's a camera introduced in my home environment that I don't really have control of, that's part of the service.
Ah, that reminds me of the Massachusetts wiretap. The DA is trying to expand their powers on that recently, that statute.
Absolutely. Privacy is a big concern.
Yeah, it's just going to be a no from me all around. It's going to be a no from me, dude.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk to our very special fearless leader himself when we come back. So continuing our conversation on the Amazon Key service, we have a text from the 978 who says, you have a camera installed on your door to see the driver inside as part of Amazon Key. And to I say that, great. So I have video of him casing my place, but you know, the video is not going to be able to tell exactly if he's looking around to see, you know, he might just take a quick glance around and see that you have a nice TV, you have a nice audio system, and that's going to be motivation for him to figure out later, this is a house that worth hitting.
You know, what's unfortunate, and we were just talking about this earlier, Jeff, is that like technology is great in so many ways, but in the wrong hands, it's unfortunate. It gets abused. You know what I mean? So how do you, you know, where do you draw that line as far as new technologies like this? Like, we're focusing on a lot of the negative aspects of this new stuff, but in a weird way, like, yeah, there is a benefit to it that we're, you know, like just delivery. Think about all the people that get their packages stolen off the steps. Like, this apparently was, you know, this idea came about preventing bad people from doing stuff. And then all it does is raise up another question. Well, how is this idea going to get used in a negative way?
Let's go to Dan in Montana. Hey, Dan, are you going to sign up for Amazon Key yourself?
Did I sign up for Amazon Key?
Would you be willing to?
I don't know. I didn't research it enough.
You want Amazon drivers coming into your home? Delivering, dropping your packages in there?
Yeah, why not? No.
Okay, so do you
not
feel safer having an Amazon guy open your door, drop off a package, or do you feel safer with your package sitting on the doorstep?
Doorstep, definitely.
I got a nice low-tech solution.
Kid.
Is go to Home Depot and get a little Foot Locker bin and give the Amazon guy the key to that and put it outside on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
You can drop your package in this little box I set out on the sidewalk if you really can't be home for your package coming in.
Yeah, or schedule it for when you're there. I mean, if it's that expensive a package, figure it out. Or it's like, what's the cost-benefit analysis? Cost is maybe it gets stolen. Benefit in your house is it goes in your house, but you just open up the door to a whole new plethora of problems.
Exactly. But Amazon must have a play here where they think this is going to be able to appeal to enough people for them to sell this product, right?
Yeah, and it probably will.
That's crazy
people,
to me.
People sacrifice a lot for for comfort. Actually, everything. They'll give up everything one little bit at a time. Think of like the Echo. Same concept.
So, Dan, I know you're a state representative out in Montana. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
What kind of things can you do as a state legislator to try to combat that feeling where people are slowly willing to give away those kind of things in their lives to sacrifice a little bit of liberty for safe packages, for example?
So I get my DVDs on time.
Isn't this kind of like a free market decision, though? They're not really sacrificing liberty because they're voluntarily choosing to allow Amazon to drop packages off. I mean, that's just basically our everyday interactions. We decide who we trust and who we don't. So
that is exactly what my answer is, too. If it's the government, then we have a problem because they don't have the ability to go in without certain procedures. That's why I passed a ton of laws on my state is warrant requirements and very high standards. And with companies, I mean, you can allow anything to happen. You get to choose who walks into your door, your friends, anybody you want, a company. You get to choose that.
It's like that commercial with those old ladies and the life alert button, right? You're like agreeing to let them in your house when you push that button.
And
they could just come rob you, little old granny.
We've seen this from companies like Apple, who have very strong encryption on their phones and are very reluctant to give up that to the FBI, for example, because there's actually a market demand from their customers.
They'll sell it. They'll sell your information for money.
No, but there's a higher demand from their customers to actually secure their data from prying eyes, actually. And they're actually responding to that.
So, Ken, do you think, like, if Granny hit that life alert button, it'd, like, some thieves would come and steal all Granny's jewelry, leave her lying on the floor?
Dan, what were you going to say?
Data. So I think it's a little bit of a segue, but internet companies are, I think, the real conversation piece. Yes, this is a new product. People are going to make that choice. But internet companies are already able to collect all of your data. And with new rollbacks to regulations federally, the next plan is for them to advertise with all the data going through their, basically through these ISPs, and advertise to you. That's not like a little bit of information. That's all your information. I mean, if you, it's not just like on Facebook, I share, on Google, I choose what to Google. They get everything. My app, when I'm using my like phone or when I'm on my computer, they get every single thing.
Your health statistics, your heart rate.
And dude, they know if you're looking at inappropriate websites. They know, or quote unquote inappropriate websites.
So does Santa Claus.
They know if you have like healthcare issues. They know if like, if you're the father, you have
Google
a daughter
a divorce
who's looking
lawyer.
At it, it's like, I'm pregnant. Exactly. Divorce lawyer,
you know, if
or
I'm cheating on my wife.
Anything.
Yeah, you'll start getting coupons for diapers and baby formula.
You know, what's crazy? And I don't know if anybody else has had this experience, but I've had conversations with people, and then I pulled up my phone on Facebook afterwards, and there's an ad for like keywords that I said, and it's not something that I have even put into my phone text-wise, not something I've Googled or searched or something, but if I make a joke and there's a word in there and then there's an ad for like one of those words, I think it's pretty curious that like the phone has heard what I've said.
All in your head, Jeff. What are you
Is it? I'm paranoid. Yeah, I should just
absolutely.
Shut up.
No, it does that all the time.
Does anybody else? Call in now if you've had this experience. Corroborate this for me, please.
If you talk about cruises and off the coast of Mexico, all of a sudden
I'm talking about stuff that's a little bit more obscure
feed.
From that, so I'm not being like just paranoid for no reason. I'm talking about like very obscure references that I've made in conversation.
It does
it just pops
that though.
Up on my
you
phone.
Don't you didn't know that?
All right, Dan, if we can give me one more thought, we're up against, so we can give you a little bit more time.
So back with the internet companies, because that's obvious, that's like the big thing everybody's looking at right now. And even what you're talking about is your conversations. The big question that nobody asks. But who does the data about you belong to? In other countries, especially I think Germany, because they have some pretty nasty history, they have a lot more protections of your data belongs to you. So that's something I think is worth legislating, because if it's your property, it's a property right issue that is being obtained through these internet companies and being used without your consent. So
I have a question,
that's
though.
When, yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, do you think in a way legislating like privacy, like when it comes to data and stuff like that, is giving people like a false sense of security that once you put your information out there, like it's safe? Because this goes back to about trust, right? And every day we decide who to trust. Do you trust Facebook with your information? Do you trust, you know, your cell phone provider with your information? I mean, this really, when we decide to go online and put our information out there, is that not a voluntary decision we made? And we're kind of assuming the risks that it may or may not be shared with other parties?
When you're using Facebook and Google, yes, but when I'm calling you or texting you, I'd say 90% of people assume that that's a text between you and who you're texting.
Reasonable explanation.
Is that like a false sense of security, though, to assume that, you think, in today's day and age?
It is, but technology is complicated, and people, I mean, I've studied these issues for years, and it's complicated, and then people do have false sense of security, but they think that data is actually their property, and if data is their property and it's being obtained without their consent, then that's my role as a legislator to fix that.
All right, Dan. That's a really interesting perspective. Thank you so much for calling in. Call back any week you'd like. We'd love hearing you on Liberty on the Air. Thank you so much. Let's go to another Dan, the fearless leader himself, Dan Fishman. Happy birthday, Dan. How you doing?
I am doing well. I love the fact that I have to be on hold to get on a show that I'm normally on otherwise. This
yeah, well,
like
we wanted to give you the full experience of being a caller to Liberty on the Air.
it's pretty good, and I enjoy it. So I got a couple things to say. So first of all, with the Amazon door thing,
yeah.
Number one, mudroom. That's what's going to happen is people are going to build little extensions, front porches, whatever, and that's where they'll put the lark.
I don't know. You don't know what I got going on in the mudroom, dude. You don't know what I got going on in there.
Would it be a good idea to put the smart lock on the lock box that Jeff was talking about? Why make it a mudroom? Just make it a box.
You could totally do that, too.
Just get a bigger mailbox, dude.
Yeah.
What do you need to let people in your house?
I mean, a mailbox isn't good, but, like, you know, for example, the things that I don't want them to take, like if I'm getting a big flat-inch flat-screen TV or something like that delivered, yeah, dude, come in the mudroom, put it in there, have another bolt on the other side of the door.
I don't know. I think you can make arrangements to be home for that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying that there's a whole bunch of other options that are there aside from the idea of saying, oh, this is only a threat to my security.
Yeah.
The other thing about it is that, you know, data is indeed a commodity. That's why the internet is free. The internet is free because you are paying for it with your data. You know,
right.
People who don't want that, you can absolutely anonymize yourself and access the internet in that way.
But to anonymize yourself on the internet takes a certain level of technical savvy and skill that the most public people have no idea is even possible,
yeah,
let alone
that's how you
try.
Get on a watch list. Let's say get on a watch list, unofficial watch list.
True, but, I mean, again, that's essentially what the price is. The price of it for your anonymity is for you to be willing to learn how to do that stuff. And so, you know, there's a cost associated with it. You know, Heather's comment, I thought, was exactly right, that it is something that we are actually paying for, but we don't realize what we're paying for. You know, I want to throw back one other thing about Tito Jackson and Marty Walsh.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't think there's any comparison between the two of them, because Marty Walsh, even though he's a recovering alcoholic and was trying to expand liquor licenses in Boston in the last election cycle, was vehemently opposed to legalizing marijuana. and is working his hardest to make sure that no marijuana dispensaries, no commercial ones, can be opened up inside of Boston.
Right.
I mean, that's incredibly hypocritical when, as a former recovering alcoholic, he knows how addictive alcohol can be.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second thing, Marty Walsh was willing to sell Boston to the Olympics, right? He was all for it. Everything out, Tito Jackson came out against it almost immediately.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Of course, the show that you decide to step out, Dan, is the one we have technical problems. But I had a couple audio clips of Tito Jackson actually pointing out the Olympics thing. And Marty Walsh's response stunned me, was that he said that he made the decision to pull out because he didn't want to mortgage the future of Boston on the Olympics. And I just like was so taken aback by that, because that was absolutely false that
it's
he said
flip,
that
flop and a half.
On WGBH, on live television, he said that.
Yeah, and that's exactly the sort of dangerous speak that should warn us and say, this is a guy who will say anything. He will absolutely recant, and I guess he's probably not going to come on the show next week now, but he will absolutely... you know, say anything to get elected.
Maybe you've given him some fuel to try to rebut you, you know, on the air.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah. I mean, he's got that $100 million lawsuit that he needs to be worrying about now. Did you guys all see that in the paper?
We did.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. I have a feeling that there's a countersuit coming, mm-hmm. which is going to be very interesting as well. It's only going to be for about $5 million, but...
A countersuit? You know, who? Someone's going to be suing Brandon now?
I think so. I mean, that's what
really?
I'm hearing. Yeah, so we'll see what happens. I mean, that's just usually the way they play these games. Essentially the person with the largest war chest loses.
Yeah, I mean, is that justice, though? Whoever has the most money is the and the most lawyers?
That's how you wield the justice system.
That's how rich people do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. The problem is that once you start playing that game, that's where it goes.
Yeah. And the problem, too, is I definitely, my two cents on that whole thing is... Mayor Walsh should have been held to a little bit of a higher standard, not spoken, and you know,
labeled good people. It's tough to say because he never mentioned Brandon.
No, but you know what? He should know better than to judge an entire lineup of speakers like that and falsely label them. I mean, that was he jumped the gun on that statement.
We're talking about libel. We're not talking about, you know, woulda, shoulda, coulda.
Yeah, that
can't be libel.
The lawsuit seems tough to prove libel in that case. I would have thought a lawsuit. Actually, from maybe a journalistic entity against the city of Boston for violating their First Amendment rights, that would have been a lot more likely to succeed, in my opinion. Because
what's interesting about that is that they talked about that on Emily Rooney's show, Beat the Press, on GBH. They said, you know, this lawsuit, they talked about Brandon's lawsuit a little bit, and they said, however, we all agree that it is criminal that they did not allow the press free access. And that there should be a lawsuit about that. And I agree with that 100%.
Well, the other thing, too, is Mayor Walsh never came out and, described all of the angry mobs of people that I filmed. I filmed that free speech rally and the counter protests afterwards that ended up bringing, violence to the street. I saw people attacking police officers, and I got it on camera that ended up going viral on News to Share's Facebook page. And
yeah, I mean, that stuff is live
it's
now,
crazy.
Right? People can look at it.
Yeah, you can go to a Facebook page. It's called News, and then the number 2, and then Share. And if you go and scroll back in the video footage, it's all raw footage of, protests and stuff. But I covered the Boston Free Speech event, and I had on camera these counter-protesters. I don't know if they were Black Lives Matter or Antifa or whatever they were, but they were attacking police officers, just swinging at them. They were whipping bottles. It was crazy. Yeah. But never once did Mayor Walsh speak of this in any of his interviews, any of his press statements. He was all like, oh, well, we don't want the white supremacists here or anything like that. But the violence that I caught on camera that day was all the counter protesters that he enraged with his comments, you know, originally. I mean, a lot of them wouldn't have been there were it not for the instigating of the whole thing from the CNN anchor that tweeted Mayor Walsh and then Mayor Walsh's, you know, statements in the paper. And then Mayor Walsh tries to act like the hero.
You don't think that the instigation starts when, you know, they announce a speech with a whole bunch of white supremacists in it? Because that's the original lineup. There's no way around that. And once that happens, you know, Jeff put it perfectly. Hmm. Jeff said that the original inviting of Augustus Invictus
Austin
was
Gillespie.
A terrible mistake that uninviting him could not correct. And that's perfect.
Yeah, right, absolutely. I think, obviously, inviting, they were trying to invite everyone, And right. that was a mistake and unforeseen that, you know, obviously it was unrelated to Charlottesville, but when that happened, there was obviously a knee-jerk reaction there. But I was sitting with Brandon on Wednesday night talking about this, and we came to an interesting conclusion, is that Brandon said that, you know, when Marty Walsh was saying all these things, you know, he's saying like, oh, we tried to shut it down. And he's really just trying to save face. He's really just trying to prove that he's doing something when he's not going to do anything about it. There's nothing that he could do legally. The attorney general would have told him, you know, this is free speech. There's nothing we can do. So Marty Walsh went to the press and said what he said.
They could have 100% not had police protection.
So I guess the point is that after the fact, after he said all the things that he said, after he said all the things that he said, he came and said, oh, well, you know, I just didn't know better. I didn't know what was going on. And it's like, aren't you in charge of several law enforcement agencies that could have done a little bit of research and figured out that these two rallies were unrelated before you went off saying these things that you
what
said?
What Mayor Walsh said put the police in harm's way, though.
All right, Dan, we're up against it. Anything you want to say, anything you want to plug before we let you go on your birthday?
I think you guys are doing a great show. I'm really enjoying listening to it, and I'm looking forward to hear how things wrap up.
I loved your version of Piano Man, Dan.
if you know Dan on Facebook, and you can make your way over to his Facebook page, take a look at Dan rocking out his version of Piano Man.
All right, thanks, guys. Keep rocking the show.
All right, and with that, we'll be right back. So, Karen Gray is the leader of a group called Newton Citizens Against Leaf Blower Mania, also known as Newton Calm. Yes, that's right. You can't really make any of this stuff up, can you? You have to live it in the city like Newton to actually have this stuff happen to you. This group advocated for new restrictions against the use of gas-powered leaf blowers in the city of Newton that took effect this past April. So they had regulations that said certain months you can't use gas-powered leaf blowers at all. Other months, if you use them, they have to emit noise levels below a certain decibel level. And I actually checked out their website. And if you're interested, you can get training from them on how to report leaf blower violations to the Newton Police Department so you can snitch on all your neighbors.
Can I just get the address of the person that started this so that I can just go with a gas-powered leaf blower, out to their house and just do it all the time, like drive by leaf blower, like, meow.
Well, the funny thing is I saw there was an interview with her on CBS News talking about how the high-pitched noise of the leaf blower is just disrupting the tranquility of Newton, and that this group of
citizens... Isn't that the definition of privilege, though? Like, do liberals
together.
Not get that, or what?
I mean, they don't.
Sounds like it really blows to live in Newton.
Hashtag first world problems, get over it. What's your problem?
They obviously don't get it, because they don't get that they're a parody of themselves sometimes.
Yeah.
But you know, in some ways it's kind of funny, but in some ways it's kind of sad, because you had the chief of police on for the city of Newton saying, we're answering 213 something calls about leaf blower noise
from like the same five people
from this group pretty much. And they're saying that
it's all coming from Karen, and she wants to speak to the manager.
90% of these calls, the police show up and either one,
guys
are already finished, so they're gone, or two, they're there and they're actually following the ordinance and their leaf blowers are below the
level. What time of day are we talking about? Is this happening between 7 a.m. and 10 p.m.? Because if it's happening in the middle of the night, then like complain.
2 a.m. leaf blowing, maybe.
Yeah.
No, this is just
I'm trying to have a party over here. You're blowing leaves and stuff.
During the workday. Because when you're at home during the workday and you don't have a full-time job, you know, you just want to be able to relax. You can't have
someone. Problem is these people have so much money they don't need to work.
Right, exactly.
They're at home resting on the duvet.
And she was actually quoted saying, well, if Newton residents want, you know, their landscaping done, they can just pay a little more to have it done, you know, without a gas-powered leaf blower. What, you know, what's the big deal? But to me, this is an example of how level-headed people like you, the listener of this show, and everyone listening out there, need to be involved at the levels of their local governments, because when you're not, and when you're not plugged in, it's groups like these that show up to the city or town meetings and get crap like this passed.
Vocal minorities.
And what happens when they propose this plan, right? And the town weighs it pros and cons, and they might have like a little meeting about it. And if no one shows up to oppose it, then they kind of just go, okay, so there's people in for it. There's no one against it. So let's make it happen. But people like you can actually go to your town and city meetings and say, this is ridiculous. We don't need police resources being used to chase down leaf blowers.
Yeah, and that's your tax dollars at work. Yeah, 95% of people are so apathetic that they don't even know, like...
Is that the problem? Is apathy the problem? Especially, like, we're talking about the mayor race. No one cares.
Police should just stop responding to these people. I mean, this is ridiculous. It's not law.
Selective enforcement, I mean, is a thing that happens when there's, like, laws.
I mean, you had those Gloucester police that stopped, you know, arresting people for possession of drugs. I mean, why can't these police stop going and harassing people that are trying to clean up their yard?
Hopefully they're not arresting anybody for this, but yeah, I mean, it's like, it's just a waste of police resources.
Yeah, my neighbor would be considered a felony if he got in trouble for his leaf blower.
Yeah.
Well, he can cross Newton off his list of towns he's moving to, cities he's moving to.
I think that our system of democracy, like, really enforces apathy because, like when we have, like, this mayoral race, it's a one-party race. Like, there's – and a lot of the races in Massachusetts, political races in all levels, all the way up and down.
Sure,
They're all single-party races, and, like, people just don't – they just tune out.
Yeah, actually, 50% of state legislative races in Mass – in 2016 were unopposed.
That's 50% not a democracy. We're failing at democracy. It's an F for democracy.
I gotta give the was that what they're called, calm? I gotta give them a little bit of credit though for getting off their butt and going out there. And it's like, game well played, man.
Why is
like,
it the authoritarians? Why is it the authoritarians that are always the ones that can get
but
together?
You know what? If people don't like
together.
The leaf blowers, get to those town meetings and show them what's up. Like,
but,
I mean, bring your A game. You know what I mean?
If we could only get people to do stuff
like
that for stuff that actually matters.
I mean, like, I don't like motorcycles. I'm not a motorcycle guy. I don't have an affinity for them. And sometimes I'm in traffic and they're loud and I don't like them.
Hey, loud pipes save lives, brother.
But you know what I do? They turn away and I drive away and I was inconvenienced for 10 seconds of my life. I don't need government banning motorcycles just because I don't like the noise they make.
Well, I think they should be arrested.
Yeah,
it's quite inconsiderate that they're so loud.
Arrest all the motorcyclists. You're right. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Just have them go drive around Newton.
Oh, that's a good idea. Let's find a new noise source.
You know, I ride. I have a Harley. I have a sports car.
Here you go. Someone should organize a motorcycle ride through the neighborhood of all these like calm leaf blower hating people. Just like do that.
That's the ride.
Yeah.
The ride for leaf blowers.
We'll call it Leave Me Alone.
All right, with that, I'll say thank you so much for listening, guys. This is Liberty on the Air. Check us out anytime at www.libertyontheair.com. We'll catch you next week, and we look forward to hearing you. Hearing Dan next week. Hopefully,
stay,
Dan will be back.
Stay classy, Boston.
Dan will be back.
Stay classy.
Good night, Skippy.
People talk about sin taxes. The government taxes cigarettes because it says smoking is bad, and they want less people to smoke. The government taxes alcohol because it says drinking is bad, and they want less people to drink. So why is the government taxing income? Join that discussion and lots more, and listen live to Liberty on the Air with your host, Dan Fishman, every Saturday night at 11 p.m. right here on The Voice of Boston, AM 680, WRKO.